Hello again, TGP. It's Monday, September 27th, 2021. This is In the Know, episode 15. Yeah, man, that's awesome. Handful of announcements for you. Bibleville is currently happening weekly now. We were only on the second and fourth of every month, but now it's every week. So parents who have kids over like 5 years old, you have a place that your children can come and learn the Bible at an age-appropriate level. But as always, you're also welcome to keep them in the service with you. October the 3rd, which is next Sunday, like the one at the end of this week, the beginning of next week, like the next Sunday that we'll meet together. October 3rd, after service, we're going to canvass the neighborhood, the Wardville neighborhood, to pass out Sportsville flyers so that people are aware that this is beginning to happen again. And then on October 6th, next Wednesday, Sportsville will resume. So we need lots of volunteers for that. We need teachers. We need crowd control. We need people to keep kids and people to make sure that we have all of the food passed out and everything that we're going to be doing. So please pray about doing that. A handful of the people who were helping out have moved. And so we just have some holes to fill. So let's rally around that. I think we're going to do it October and most of November for the fall. And then this just kind of started happening today, but there is talk of a women's retreat weekend, January the 8th, or that at least that weekend of January the 8th. The details are to be determined, but just for now, let me ask you to save the date. If you want more information on that or you want to help with that in any way, you can contact Allison Hinsgens. Okay, let's jump into some sermon recap. I need to make one important qualification to a point I made yesterday. It doesn't alter it, but adds a more biblical nuance, a bit more color maybe to what I said. I said and deeply believe that we have not and never will outsin our usefulness in God's kingdom. Gloriously true. God delights to give sinners his kingdom and use them in it to represent him to the lost and to one another. But someone might ask, what about qualifications for elders and deacons? Isn't there a way to disqualify yourself for those positions? And if so, is that not outsinning our usefulness? And I would still give the same answer. Absolutely not. Certain sins may keep you or disqualify you from a particular office within the church, but that's not the same thing as saying that God will never use you in his kingdom. There are myriad ways he might use you that don't involve serving in the official capacity of elder or deacon. I mean, right, we only have four elders in our church right now. So that means that the other 65, 70 members that we have are not doing elder work, but they are still being used in God's kingdom. Or, for instance, if a man, let's say, has criminal sexual abuse in his past, prudence would say that he ought not serve in like children's or youth ministry. But that's not the same as saying that God can't or won't use such a man. He just might use him differently based on those past sins. But such a man still may end up being an excellent evangelist or helping in mercy ministries or in any number of other avenues. So praise God that he uses us repeat offenders in his kingdom, and praise his name that he isn't ashamed to do so. Now let's talk for a moment about the restraining influence of God. One point I came across in Dale Davis's commentary this week, but just didn't have time to preach on, was that we shouldn't look at Abraham or Abimelech and say, "I would never blank." Those are dangerous words. Rather, Davis argues, we should take a posture of humility with the understanding that we are just like Abraham. Further, we should actually pray that God does for us what he says he did for Abimelech. He says in verse 6, "It was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her." So however it happened, and I'd wager that over that time, it was in various and creative ways, God stood in the way of Abimelech's approach to Sarah to prevent him from sinning against her and, more importantly, against himself. We should pray that God does the same for us. We should ask him to prevent and block our paths towards sin. Now, that might hurt, but it will be for our ultimate good. Did you also pick up on the fact that God says this sin, while it would have been against Sarah and Abraham, was ultimately against God? Right? He says, "It was I who kept you from sinning against me." One commentator this week said that that fact would have been surprising to people in Abraham's cultural moment, that ancient Near Eastern culture. They generally thought adultery, and they rightly thought adultery, was ruinous to families, but they also thought it was primarily against the husband. But God tells Abimelech that it would have been a grave sin against God himself. Joseph's story makes this point similarly when Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. He acknowledges that while it would violate Potiphar's trust, it seems that he should be most concerned with the fact that it would be wickedness against God himself. You can find that in Genesis 39, verses 8 and 9. And in the wake of his affair with Bathsheba and the murder of her husband, David prays to God, "Against you, you only have I sinned," Psalm 51, verse 4. So not only do we need to make sure we call sin sin, but we also increasingly need to share God's view of our sin, that it's primarily against him. God be merciful to us and keep us from all manner of wickedness against you. In the sermon Sunday, I tried to highlight what I believe is one of the main things God reveals in this story. But he teaches much more than that. As I was thinking through this, I tried to think about all the things God reveals. Probably honestly only be scratching the surface here, but let me just list a handful of the other things I came up with. They sort of build on one another, so try to stick with the reasoning here. In the course of this narrative, God exposes Abraham's fears as having been unjustified in the first place, as Abimelech proved to fear the Lord, and Abimelech was eager to do what he said, and he gave above and beyond what you would think to make sure that he cleared and vindicated Sarah's dignity and honor, as well as his own self of wrongdoing. So there seems like Abraham was fearful that there was no fear of the Lord in that place, and that fear was not justified. It wasn't borne out through the narrative. But even more than that, God demonstrates how insufficient fear is to lead a person to the right course of action, right? If we're really concerned with righteousness, the proper motivation is not fear. Fear will never get us to God's means and to God's desired ways of doing things. It will not lead us to right action. Fear will lead us down the wrong path, into folly, and really into all manner of wickedness and fleshly reasoning and fleshly action, which is exactly what happens with Abraham. Fear is an insufficient motivator into right action. Faith, however, is right. So more than that, God shows how humanity is unable to manipulate circumstances to secure desired outcomes. We just can't plan every single outcome. We just can't see all of the details and the whole picture to pick the right course of action to get the right result. And so God just pulls the rug out from under Abraham's efforts. And as he does so, he shows Abraham, you can't do what I do. You can't play God. You can't have control over this circumstance the way that you want it so that you get the outcome you're looking for. And so all of this is like pushing us toward faith, right? So fear is not a right motivator, and we can't manipulate circumstances, right? It's just all pushing toward that. We'll get there in just a second. More than even that, God reveals how lying as our means of manipulating circumstances is able to lead and often does lead others into grave sin and guilt before God. Our lies can ruin others' lives. And even more, God shows Abraham how unbelief is never going to go well and is never the answer to any scenario. There is never a situation in which unbelief will make things better for us. And finally, through all those other lessons, what God really is doing is he's ultimately displaying his all-sufficiency, his power, his faithfulness, covenant love, patience, grace, and dependability to Abraham, drawing him nearer and encouraging even greater and deeper faith. So it ultimately lands on God's display of his glory so that we will be more likely to trust him and not try to fix our own perceived problems. So what's the remedy, to believing sin's lies? So I believe Abraham's problem is not mental so much as it is moral. It isn't so much a matter of right knowledge as it is of belief. And speaking generally, that describes us as well. Consider this. We in the church know God's decrees about what is best for us, understand well enough what does and does not please God, and perceive at least to some degree the grave dangers of sin. Yet somehow, even with all that knowledge, we still convince ourselves that this time will be different, will work out better, or will yield what we really want. And we continually buy into the lie that this sin and all its dangers, risks, and potential consequences, this sin still makes more sense than just taking God at his word and acting accordingly. In other words, we persuade ourselves against all reason and rational evidence that sin makes more sense than faith. This is grade A certified insanity. It's nonsense. We are given naturally to utter absurdity. And it's tragic how often we convince ourselves with stunning success that we know better than God, that his word is less reliable than our own reasoning, and that we can enjoy the perceived benefits of our sin while simultaneously avoiding all the spiritual risks, dangers, and consequences thereof. We are experts in believing that God does not have our very best intentions bound up in his very heart and in his purposes in all situations. Until we come to trust his word is true, believe that all his intentions for us are good, and trust that he actually does know better than we do what will promote flourishing and impart real life, we will continue in the miserable cycle of sin and sorrow, wondering all the while why it isn't working out for us. In short, the remedy to believing lies is to replace them with truth. Dismantle lies with truth. Take faulty thoughts captive and believe in their place the truth of God's word. We will certainly have to know his word and what it says in order to believe it, but our knowledge will get us nowhere without genuine faith in his word. We must take him at his word and order our lives accordingly. So let's go this week. Take God at his word. Believe that his word is true. Believe that God knows better than you what will promote flourishing. Trust his intentions in every circumstance, and so live your life as one who believes the truth of this word. Have a great week. I love you, people.